This is John Floridus. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. Our guest today is Billy Childs. This is John Floridus. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. I'm very pleased to be speaking by phone today to Billy Childs. Billy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's a real pleasure to get a chance to visit with you here on Musician Spotlight. A lot of our listeners, of course, will be familiar with Billy's music, but if you're not, Billy's a multiple Grammy Award-winning pianist, composer, and arranger with many recording projects under his own name, as well as with people like Yo-Yo Ma, Sting, Chick Corea, Wynton Marsalis, and the LA Philharmonic. His most recent project is nominated for 3 more Grammys, Map to the Treasurer, a reimagining of Laura Nero. We're going to be talking about that project and hearing some music from that as well. This is a collaboration with many incredible musicians, ranging from Alison Krauss, Diane Reeves, Chris Botti, Sean Colvin, Renee Fleming, Wayne Shorter, Susan Tedeschi, and Esperanza Spalding. I'll just mention to you, Billy, several of those folks have been on our program, actually.
So, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, you'd be in familiar territory here.
I'm in good company.
Yeah. Well, they're in good company, too. Let's make that clear right from the start. Billy, I think where I wanted to start was talking about your influences, because in reading through your bio information and stuff on your website, from a very early age, you were interested in combining jazz and classical concepts in your music. And when I looked through your inspirations and your influences, some of them seem very, might be very apparent with that, you know, Chick Corea, Herbie Hancock, Maurice Ravel, Igor Stravinsky, Paul Hindemith, and then Keith Emerson's in there as well, which I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. You know, a lot of people laugh when I mentioned Keith Emerson, but really Keith Emerson is one of the heaviest musicians out there. I think people are thinking of Emerson, Lake, and Palmer in terms of like some sort of Spinal Tap group, you know, that dresses up as armadillos and stabs the organ, you know, or the piano, or piano is rotating at a 360-degree, you know, turn. But
sure. But
really, Keith Emerson is a serious, serious musician and one of the pioneers of combining genres. You know, he would put classical music and embed it in these rock kind of contexts, and it was very, you know, virtuosic and well thought out and imaginative and creative, ambitious music. And it always puzzles me that he's never been taken seriously as a serious composer.
Well, and actually, I'm very glad that you say that, because I only laugh out of my own familiarity with the fact that he very much was an influence on me in terms of just turning me on to a lot of classical music in general as a young person. There was a lot of jazz, you know, and classical concepts kind of in there with the rock, and that does seem to play into the path that you've traveled.
Yeah, definitely. You know, when I grew up, when I was really being influenced and had an impressionable mind that was kind of subject to the influences that were around me, I was around maybe 14 years old, and this was like in the early 70s, and what was going on was this really incredible confluence of genres and various disciplines coming together. You know, classical music and rock was happening. Jazz and rock were, you know, kind of like merging. And when Miles Davis came out with Bitches Brew, and all of the people who came out of that school of thought, you know, formed their own groups, like the Mahavishnu Orchestra with John McLaughlin and Billy Cobham, Return to Forever with Chick Corea, and Weather Report with Joe Zawinul and Wayne Shorter, I thought it was a natural, organically blend musics together. I didn't really recognize a line that had to be drawn between genres.
Hmm.
So this kind of informs my music.
Among those influences, which one do you think had the most to do with your sense of melody in your compositions?
You know, melodies have been ingrained in my head since childhood. When I grew up, which was in the 60s, when you would listen to a TV commercial,
mm-hmm.
even the silliest melody, even what if they were advertising, you know, something like toothpaste or something, or soap, you would still hear a distinct melody.
That's so true.
You know? And that was what attracted you to the music anyway, the melodic, and the melodies seemed to describe the thing that they were advertising, you know, and in movies also, the melodies would describe the scene a lot, you know? So I guess my sense of melody comes from just, you know, the things that were around me, the pop songs that were around me, the commercials that were around me, the incidental music that kind of was in my life.
This is John Floridas. You're listening to Musician Spotlight, and I'm speaking by phone today with Billy Childs. Let's talk about The Map to the Treasure, the reimagining of Laura Nyro. And this is a pretty major project, to put it mildly, as I mentioned in the introduction, the folks that you're collaborating with. And let's just talk about how this project came together. As I said, it's up for another 3 Grammy Awards as we are recording this interview. Let's just talk about how this project came together and how what it meant to you to be able to work on this effort.
Well, I've been thinking about this project for the better part of 10 to 15 years, you know. And at first I thought maybe I would do it as an instrumental album. But her lyrics are so much a part of what the stories are of her songs that it really was made clear to me that it should be, it should be sung. But then, the challenge of that is that Laura Nyro had such a distinctive take on her own music. It was so unique and so beautiful. I was wondering, it really can't be just one singer. Because, invariably that singer would be compared to Laura Nyro.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be multiple singers on multiple tracks. Throughout the years, it kept in the background of my mind. And so a couple of years ago, finally, I just told my agent, I said, we got to do this Laura Nyro thing somehow. We have to make this happen.
It's interesting you talking about just the importance of the words and particularly the female voice. And I can't help but notice the range of female voices that are on this project. All of them very distinct in their own ways, you know, from Alison Krauss to Susan Tedeschi to Diana Reeves, you know, Renee Fleming. They're all incredibly distinct female voices. Can you talk a little bit about just how you encourage them, or how, you know, what kind of guidance, if you gave them any kind of guidance as to how to approach that kind of daunting task of trying to step into that role of the narrator of these songs of Laura Nyro's?
Well, one thing we didn't want them to do is to try to sing like Laura Nyro, which each of them is so much their own artist that they wouldn't do that anyway. We just cast this album so that we could, and to the best of our ability, to try to match up what we thought the singer's sensibilities, natural tendencies and sensibilities were, to what the song was about. And a lot of times the contrast in styles would be interesting, you know, like, you know, someone who you wouldn't think would be singing a particular song, what they bring to it because of their background, is an interesting thing. And so, you know, there are a lot of different factors in getting the singers to perform the way they did, you know. But the main thing is, like, we got people who were strong personalities in their own right and we're just going to bring their thing to this particular song.
Don't go to Gibson, cross the river. The devil is hungry, the devil is sweet. If you are soft, then you will shiver. They hate the alley cats on Gibson Street. They hate the alley cats on Gibson Street. Oh, Gibson. My baby were forbidden. I wish that my world be took by sleep. I wish to keep my mirror hidden, to hide the eyes that look Gibson Street, to hide the eyes that looks on Gibson Street. Oh, Gibson, Gibson Street.
Billy, you mentioned your connection to the lyrics of Laura Nyro, and that brings me to my next question. Though you're an instrumentalist, I can't help but be struck by what I perceive as a just an ongoing connection with words. And one of the reasons that I bring that up is I'm very drawn to your album titles and song titles. I think they're very poetic. Autumn and Moving Pictures. Take, for example, this: Twilight is upon us. His April touch. I've known rivers. They're all very compelling titles that draw me in before I even hear a note.
Wow. Some of those titles are actually lines taken from poems.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense then.
Yeah, like take for example this, or I've Known Rivers, or His April Touch are. Well, take for example this and His April Touch are E.E. Cummings poems.
Oh.
And I've Known Rivers, of course, is a Langston Hughes poem. But yeah, I try to create music that's visual, that conjures images or emotions, you know, and, you know, I try also with the titles to describe what the intent of the music is.
Well, that's where I was going to go with that question is, do you usually use that kind of a programmatic approach in your writing? And for our listeners, programmatic music meaning either stemming from or trying to elicit something, some images in the mind of the listener, or going along with a story, something that is different than just music for the sake of the music itself. Is the programmatic approach, is that something that you generally try to do with your writing?
Yeah, actually I do. The journey could be an internal one, like an expressionist one, where you're talking about emotions and these emotions keep shifting or something, or it could be an impressionist one where you're talking about the outside world, like in the instance of Autumn and Moving Pictures, trying to describe autumn. Yeah, I always find that a program, a specific storyline or a thing that I'm writing about, you know, helps the experience of, you know, the holistic experience of listening to my music.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. We're joined today by phone by Billy Childs. Billy, one of the things that I came across in looking through your bio information online, one of the quotes was one that called you the most American composer since Aaron Copland. And well, not to just flatter you there with that, but what I wanted to ask was, what does it mean to you to be an American composer?
Well, I mean, this is a complex country. It's a melting pot, and it has a lot of issues. And it's a great country, you know, and there are a lot of, it means a lot of different things to write music that is particularly coming from the American point of view. You know, jazz is is an American phenomenon. And that's part of my being. But also, there's an optimism, there's an expansiveness, you know, there's a complexity, a layered aspect to it, you know, there's a tension, you know, And there's all sorts of things. So it means a lot of different things to write from an American perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it made a lot of sense when I read that in not so much. Well, I can draw some comparisons just musically with some of the spaces in your music that people think of, you know, as being Copeland-esque or something. Not that I heard anything that was particularly directly influenced by it, but also thinking back to, you know, as we started this conversation, talking about the range of influences that came to you and helped, you know, create the composer that you are. They're all very disparate, you know, influences, and it made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, definitely. I have a lot of disparate influences. I mean, I'm glad to be called an American composer. That's, you know, what I am, and I am a voice in America. You know, there are some people that claim to be the voice of America, but, you know, I am a voice in America, you know, and hopefully a voice that adds a bit of understanding and adds a bit of, you know, depth, you know, and complexity to this whole melting pot.
BillyChilds.com is the name of the website where you can find out more about what Billy is doing. And there's some good videos online, too, about the Laura Nyro project, Map to the Treasure, Reimagining of Laura Nyro, as well as tons of videos of many of your other performances and collaborations. Thank you so much for making time to be a guest on Musician Spotlight and giving us a call.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great talking to you, and I look forward to the chance we can maybe visit again down the road.
Yeah, hope so.
This is John Floridus. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today has been Billy Childs. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org. You can also contact us through our own website, musicianspotlight.org, as well as through Facebook. Our program is now available as a downloadable podcast from those websites, as well as through iTunes. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.